Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Once upon a time, specifically the 1850s, there lived a man who worked as a civil servant to Bavaria's crown prince. He moved in royal circles and was highly esteemed, but his true passion was folklore, gathering the stories of the common people.
It was once said of this man that nowhere in the whole of Germany is anyone collecting folklore so accurately, thoroughly, and with such a sensitive ear.
Now, who is the hero of this fairy tale? Who is this Prince Charming? One of the brothers Grimm, perhaps? No. In fact, the man in question is one Franz Xaver von Schönwerth.
Schönwerth lived and worked at about the same time as the Grimms, but as his work faded into obscurity, until 2012, when 500 of Schönwerth's fairy tales were unearthed from the municipal archive of Regensburg.
72 of these fairy tales are now available in modern English in a new collection titled The Turnip Princess and Other Newly Discovered Fairy Tales. Maria Tatar is chair of the program in folklore and mythology at Harvard, and she translated the stories. She joins us now in the studio. Maria Tatar, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for inviting me.
So first of all, can you just tell us about your reaction, surprise, joy when back in 2012 these stories were rediscovered, I should say?
I think what is astounding about this collection is that they give us folklore rather than fake lore. The Grimms, who, of course, had just the right name for collectors of fairy tales, did a lot of editing. They published the first edition. They got bad reviews. The reviewers called the tales vulgar, off-color, inappropriate for children. So they kept fixing the stories and making them more child-friendly and parent-friendly as well. Schönwerth didn't do that. He wrote down what he heard, and he didn't edit, he didn't censor. He kept everything that was there when he heard the stories.
So as a result, they're darker, they're grittier, I see the word rough-edged to describe them.
And there are a lot of bumps in the road as well. Fairy tales have a really high coefficient of weirdness. And, you know, in a way, I would say Schönwerth sort of has that weirdness cubed almost. Things happen.
But give us an example.
Oh, well, let's see. Take something like The Turnip Princess, where a young man pulls a rusty nail out of the wall, and suddenly he's transported into a meadow, and he finds this odd turnip that has a bowl in it, that has the imprint of a young woman, and poof, presto, he is then back in the cave where he started. He tries to put the nail back in and is told, no, no, you can't do that, pulls it out again, and I won't give away the happy ending.
Well, I also, there's another story, for example, The Wolves, where queen, she, first of all, she berates her husband, saying, you know, you should not have more than one child
She berates
day,
a woman or? In the town who has
oh,
twins
a woman in the town,
and,
that's right.
And claims that, you know, she must have been unfaithful to her husband, because if you have twins, that means you know what.
But then she has seven boys in 7 days.
Seven children, and she's so embarrassed, she's so mortified that she whisks them away, and the boys grow up as adopted children. And then, oh, the king, by the way, runs his sword through the midwife.
Oh, dear.
And then 17 years later, he punishes the wife by having her dance to death in red-hot iron shoes. Now, some of your listeners may be familiar with the Grimm's version of Snow White, where the Wicked Queen dances to death in red-hot iron shoes. So I love the fact that suddenly we see that all these tropes and motifs, themes, the memes, are jumbled up, mixed up, and they reappear in Schönwerth, but in these fresh, new, startling ways.
Yeah. You know, so we actually have a radio version of one of the stories in the book, The Turnip Princess, because one of the things that we talked about a minute ago was that these are unvarnished. They really capture the true oral tradition of the country folk, the laborers, the farmers that von Schönwerth reached out to collect their stories. So I want to give people a taste of what this actually sounds like. We have one of the stories here. It's called Why Snow is White, and it's read by Radio Boston's Amory Sievertson.
After God had finished creating the meadows and giving plants and flowers all their beautiful colors, He turned to the snow on the ground and said, "You can choose whatever color you want. You end up covering everything up anyway." The snow looked at the grass and said, "Give me your green color." It went to the roses, to the violets, and to the sunflowers, for it was vain and wanted to have a beautiful skirt. But the grass and the flowers made fun of the snow and gave it the cold shoulder. The snow turned to the flowers known as snowdrops and said in despair, "If no one is willing to give me a color, then I will be like the moon, always upset that no one can see it." The little flower replied, "If you like my shabby little coat, you can have it." The snow took it, and from then on it was always white, and it became the enemy of all other flowers.
We thought that was particularly appropriate, given the winter.
I was just thinking, yes, you could not have picked a more perfect tale for Boston.
I love the bluntness of that story, which makes me wonder, who were these fairy tales for in the time that the oral tradition was at its height, when von Schoenberg was collecting these?
You know, I always remind my students of what John Updike said about fairy tales, that they were really the television and pornography of an earlier age. So think of long winter evenings where there's either nothing to do or there are lots of chores to be done, repetitive labors. And what do you do to keep people awake and interested? You tell stories full of sex and violence. So they were for multi-generational audiences in a way. And a lot of the stuff went over the heads of the kids. So in a sense, these are stories that are for everyone. You know, today, Disney is our portal to fairy tales. And, you know, they have the franchise, and they created cartoon versions of all of these stories. So we think of them as being for children. Now with live action, the live action Cinderella, I think Disney is beginning to recognize that, in fact, these stories are, you know, for multi-generational audiences, that mothers and daughters are going. And a third of the viewers of Cinderella were men. I was astonished to hear that. I mean, the emphasis was on two-thirds were women, but
that means a third of them were men. But speaking of gender, one of the things that really shines through in this collection, The Turnip Princess, is that these particular fairy tales, the old tropes that we think about fairy tales and gender are completely exploded. I mean, it's not just all evil stepmothers and fairy tale princesses.
Right. Fathers send their sons into the woods and order them to be murdered, for example, the beginning of Snow White. You know, we think all of our fairy tale heroes, our heroines, actually, they're girls. I mean, there's Jack and the Beanstalk, but he's almost the exception that proves the rule. In Schoenvedt, we suddenly discover that there are cinder lads, cinder fellas. There's Lousehead, who covers up his golden locks and who slaves away in a kitchen, burning dishes and things like that. There's a sword-wielding girl. And so, everything is mixed up in ways that you don't have the strict gender divide that you find in the Brothers Grimm.
So let me ask you, speaking of the Brothers Grimm, it was Jacob Grimm himself who in 1885 had that quote we had at the top of the segment, where nowhere in the whole of Germany is anyone collecting folklore so accurately, thoroughly, and with such a sensitive ear. And he was speaking of Schoenwerth there. Why did Schoenwerth's stories then fall into obscurity when the Grimms did not?
Good question. And, you know, I'm still scratching my head about that one. But I think that part of it had to do with the fact that the Brothers Grimm were very excited about the fact that people were paying attention to a book that they had published. So they were eager to get an audience. Schoenwerth, I think, was just an anthropologist. He wanted to go and get these stories. People laughed at his informants. Thought, why do you want to collect these silly stories? And so he was not deeply into marketing. And so he left this gigantic trove of stories that he didn't really try to, he put some of them between the covers of a book, but very few.
It seems somewhat tragic to me because he was collecting stories at a time where, I mean, is it fair to say that we're talking the 19th century, so the way of life of the people who were telling these stories was fast exiting? I mean, we're in the Industrial Revolution here.
Yeah, urbanization, industrialization. And both the Grimms and Schoenwerth were very much aware of the fact that they needed to preserve these stories before they disappeared. Now, I think, you could say actually, they never disappeared. They're just hiding. They're lurking in our culture everywhere. If you look at adult entertainments, you find Little Red Riding Hood all over the place. Anne Sexton, Angela Carter. Go to the movies and you see Working Girl, Made in Manhattan, 2 weeks' notice, Pretty Woman, Ever After. Now we call her Cinderella, and many of the films are Little Red Riding or Red Hot Riding Hood or some variant thereof. But you know, you find her in these heroines in advertisements, at the opera, and so on.
Maria Tatar, let me ask you, there is great power in stories, fairy tale, and storytelling. So we were saying that these stories were discovered, but I was reading, discovered in 2012 or rediscovered, but I was reading at least one news outlet said that some of Schoenwerth's stories were actually republished in the 1930s. As a part of a Nazi effort to foster, quote-unquote, Aryan traditions?
That's a new one for me.
That came out of the Guardian newspaper.
I think that was simply a reference to the fact that fairy tales were revived as part of folk culture in the 30s. And not so much Schoenwerth as the Brothers Grimm became part of the curriculum. And in the post-war period, for a short time, fairy tales were banned. I think someone read, you know, Hansel and Gretel, that ending where Gretel shoves the witch into the oven. That was pretty strong stuff in the context of the historical circumstances. That ban never really took hold, and the tales, you know, just quickly came back, and nobody really cared.
Well, you know, you mentioned Disney and the new Cinderella live-action film. I would love to see Disney do some of these these tales. Do you have a particular?
I doubt it.
Oh, yeah, they are a bit edgy. Do you have a particular favorite that in this collection?
I think The Enchanted Quill is just wonderful because I love the idea of writing down your wishes and having them come true, and it's almost as if you have a heroine who writes her way to a happily ever after of, you know, Sex in the City. It's kind of, you could see it as an adaptation in many different media, not just films.
Well, Maria Tatar is chair of the program in folklore and mythology at Harvard. She is the translator of a new collection of stories in the anthology, The Turnip Princess and Other Newly Discovered Fairy Tales. They were collected originally in the 19th century by Franz Xaver von Schoenwerth. Maria Tatar, thank you so much for coming in.
Great to talk with you.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.